This is The World Tonight. Good evening, I'm Douglas Edwards, CBS News. From its earliest days, the Reagan administration has deplored international terrorism and promised not to give in to it. Today, in a dramatic action, it expelled Libya's diplomats, partly for Libya's support of terrorism. Fred Graham reports.
In a sudden and unexpected action, the Reagan administration ordered the closing of the Libyan embassy in Washington, known as the People's Bureau, and ordered all Libyan embassy personnel to leave the United States within 5 working days. The reason given was Libyan encouragement of terrorist activities and reports that Libyan agents had assassinated dissident Libyans in the United States. However, in recent weeks, the Libyan government had been more conciliatory toward the United States. Libya is the third largest supplier of oil to the United States, but State Department spokesman Dean Fisher said the administration is not concerned about a possible oil cutoff.
We don't see any reason why this action should affect the oil relationship between the two countries. But in any event, American responses to Libyan policies and actions will not be determined by that oil relationship.
The State Department warned American citizens against traveling to Libya, but did not prohibit them from going there. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
More news after this.
This is Carl Malden. Now only American Express Traveler's Checks offers exclusive new services that protect more than just your money. Now if you lose your credit cards and ID along with your traveler's checks, only American Express will help you cancel your cards, issue you a temporary ID, cash a check, and put its travel service at your service 24 hours a day. Ask for American Express Traveler's Checks. Now they protect more than just your money. Now they help protect your vacation.
Services available in the U.S. and Canada. Certain conditions apply.
Adventure, romance, fantasy. The stars we know and love to see. We're taking the movies to America.
The Movie Channel brings you America's best movies 24 hours a day. Whenever you turn on your TV set, you'll see an endless variety of great movies. Just call your local cable TV company and ask for the Movie Channel by name. The Movie Channel. All movies 24 hours a day.
We're taking the movies.
It rained in Belfast today, a dull, depressing rain that seemed to express the fear that hangs over Northern Ireland now that Bobby Sands is dead. John Blackstone reports.
With a piper leading the way and the coffin draped with the flag of the Irish Republic, the body of Bobby Sands was carried tonight from his family home to the nearby parish church. 6 men in IRA battle dress walked alongside. It was a hint of the ceremony that will surround tomorrow's burial. Sands will be given the IRA's own version of a funeral with full military honors. It will be one of the biggest Republican gatherings in years. Some 20,000 people are expected. The security forces in Northern Ireland are preparing for trouble. What the British Army calls its Spearhead Battalion, a 600-man emergency force, has been sent in to help the 11,000 soldiers already here. There was, however, little trouble today. But the Republican movement is pressing the British government in other ways on the demands for which Sands died. The 3 other hunger strikers who joined the protest after Sands today sent a message out of the Mays prison. They said they too were prepared to die to back the demands for special status as political prisoners. Moreover, they claim 70 more prisoners in the Mays are also prepared to go on hunger strike. John Blackstone, CBS News, Belfast.
More news when The World Tonight continues.
For the National Association of Realtors, this is Greg Morris. You should know that discrimination against anyone in the sale or rental of real estate is against the law. When you work with a realtor, you're working with someone who respects that law. Realtors have a professional commitment to equal opportunity in housing. That's another reason to look for a realtor. A member of the National Association of Realtors.
My mom gets so mad at me if I buy her expensive gifts. She says it's the thought that counts. So last Mother's Day, I told her I had 48 gifts in one box for her. She really started to get mad. And then I gave her the gift, a Whitman sampler with 48 pieces of delicious candy inside. Boy, did I make a hit. She's always loved the Whitman sampler ever since she was a little girl. It is the thought that counts. And this Mother's Day, I'm going to keep the good thought going.
When he came back from the NATO meeting in Europe last night, Secretary of State Haig called the situation in the Middle East dangerous and delicate. Today, he dispatched President Reagan's new personal envoy to the Middle East, the veteran diplomat Philip Habib. We have two reports, first from Bob Simon in Israel.
Israelis began celebrating their 33rd birthday as a nation tonight. There is dancing in the streets and bonfires on the beach. There is also a deep sense of foreboding, a fear that events have assumed a dynamic of their own, that Israel and Syria are heading towards an armed conflict which neither country really wants. It's taken for granted that there will be no military action while U.S. Envoy Philip Habib is in the Middle East. He's due in Israel on Sunday. But there is not much hope here that his peacemaking mission will be successful. And there is anxiety that this waiting period, this giving diplomacy a chance, as it's being called, could eventually lead to a wider, more serious conflict than would have been the case a week ago. The continuing military buildup is such that if the forces do clash, it's almost bound to be large scale. Military sources here claim that an Israeli airstrike against the Syrian missiles in Lebanon could have been a relatively simple operation last week. Now, with additional missiles along Syria's border with Lebanon, it's far more complicated. Bob Simon, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
There was no sign today that the Syrians are prepared to back down. On the contrary, they held war maneuvers. Larry Pentak reports from Lebanon.
Syrian forces staged war games at an undisclosed desert location, while Israeli jets crashed the sound barrier over Beirut, South Lebanon, and reportedly over Syrian missile emplacements in the Bekaa Valley. Those surface-to-air missiles are at the heart of the current Syrian-Israeli confrontation. The apparent posturing came as the Soviet deputy foreign minister arrived in Damascus for talks which will coincide with an American peace mission headed by Reagan administration envoy Philip Habib. He begins his discussions in Beirut tomorrow. Western diplomats believe the Soviets will exert pressure on the Assad regime to compromise on the question of the missiles, which had moved into Lebanon last week. The diplomats point out that Syria would almost certainly be badly beaten in a war with Israel, and that, they say, would not be in Moscow's interest. The diplomats doubt that moderate Arab states would be of much help in a war, issuing verbal proclamations of support to Syria, while privately hoping for the collapse of the pro-Soviet Assad regime. Larry Pentak, CBS News, Beirut.
Wall Street in a moment.
This is your captain speaking from the flight deck. Our flight engineer tells me that we'll be taking...
Your flight engineer, one of the three members of the cockpit crew on most of the commercial airliners in the sky today. And one of the important reasons you fly with confidence all over the world. Your flight may be routine, or it may have some problems. Either way, your flight engineer is important to you. He's one of the three pairs of eyes and hands in the cockpit. Before your flight, he checks out all aircraft systems and tells the captain whether or not the plane is airworthy. He monitors all systems in flight, helps maintain safety surveillance, and performs other duties related to a safe flight. Making sure of your safety will be a special concern in the 80s and beyond, when air lanes and airports will be even more congested. Your flight engineer, a good man to have on board your flight. The Flight Engineers International Association.
Stocks on the upward side today. The Dow Jones Industrials closed around 973, up a fraction, 0.90. Average price per share up 14 cents on the New York Exchange. Volume 47 million. Wall Street on this world tonight.
Now, Governor Brown.
Tonight I want to talk to you about crime and what together we can do about it. But first I want to tell you about my appointment to the California Supreme Court. In keeping with the proud tradition of our court, I've selected earlier today Justice Otto Kaus to be an associate justice. Mr. Kaus has had a brilliant legal career, including 20 years as a judge. He's an Austrian immigrant, World War II veteran, and a graduate with highest honors from UCLA and Loyola University Law School. He's a man steeped in the law who will add wisdom and knowledge to our judiciary. From my knowledge of his work and conversations with him, I'm convinced that he will well perform the relentless task of assuring justice. As we address the matter of crime, It's essential that we understand this is not the time for partisanship, mere rhetoric, or a search for a scapegoat. Politicians, by the nature of their job, look for popular issues with which to identify, and crime is often the issue chosen. Today, almost everyone holding elective office has a measure to control crime, and often a statement why his adversary is weak on the subject and perhaps a part of the problem. At the police level, we see deep frustration at the courts and often at the prosecutors for not filing cases that the officer feels can be won. For the prosecutors themselves, the problem often appears to be the judges, while for the court, the trial judges often look to the Supreme Court as the problem. As for the High Court, by its canons, it can have no response. In this atmosphere of discontent, what is needed is a candid assessment of the problems and what realistically we can do to control crime. Crime waves, brutal assaults, and heartbreaking tragedies are not new. When I was growing up in San Francisco, my father was the district attorney, and we heard repeatedly about crime, juvenile delinquency, and criminal prosecutions. But today, I sense an even deeper concern about crime and personal safety. Thousands of private security guards have been hired and the level of fear, the senseless violence against old and young alike, the sheer number of burglaries create a climate of apprehension that undermines our basic right to be free in our own community. The time has come to act, but act with the wisdom in the pursuit of justice. There are literally hundreds of anti-crime bills pending in the state legislature. Some are excellent, some harmful, and some simply irrelevant. I know you expect more than a numbers game of how many bills can be passed in 1 year. You want action that will provide greater protection for you and your family and swift and fair prosecution of the lawbreakers. In this respect, I feel compelled to mention one proposal that will not have my support. That is the attempt to empower local law enforcement officials to wiretap and engage in electronic eavesdropping. Such a departure from past practice will not combat violent crime, but will tend to undermine personal privacy. Laws already on the books permit the federal government to use these surveillance techniques under tight guidelines, and I don't believe it prudent to expand the practice. Rather, I want the priority placed on combating violent crime and invasions of the home and possessions of the individual. Let me try to put the present crime problem in context. It's often said that judges are causing the problem by their leniency. Whatever's been the case in years past, recent statistics demonstrate that California judges have dramatically increased the number of felons going to state prison. In the last 6 years, there's been a 100% increase in the number of persons sent to prison. This chart shows what has happened. During the early years in the 1970s, judges in California sent an average of about 4,500 felons to state prison each year. Last year, our judges sent 11,000 felons to prison. And this year, we expect the number to be even greater. Courts are now convicting 76% or more than 3/4 of all the people arrested for felonies and prosecuted. In fact, we now have so many convicts being sent to prison that our prison system is becoming seriously overcrowded. So we've been forced to use dangerous makeshift methods, such as double celling and even housing prisoners in an abandoned warehouse. The present arrest and conviction trends continue. We will need to house another 8,500 prisoners by 1985. This chart shows that trend. You can see that the number of convicts in our state prisons has increased from just over 20,000 back in 1976 to 26,000 today. The shaded area shows you where we're heading. Laws which I've signed the past few years have lengthened sentences and mandated prison terms for a number of crimes. These were important laws which took many violent criminals off the street. But we're about at the point where our battle against crime is becoming a paper war. We pass stronger laws and mandate tougher prison sentences, but we don't have prison cells for the additional prisoners. We are literally mandating increased imprisonment for non-existent prisons. This chart shows how our current prison and jail problem developed. As you can see, the population of California has grown by 8 million or 50% during the past 20 years. During that same period, the number of people arrested for serious crimes increased 175%, but our state prisons and local jails only expanded 10%. We now have only slightly more prison and jail capacity than we had 20 years ago, even though both our population and crime rate have grown substantially. We must now expand our prison facilities or allow more and more dangerous criminals to go free. It's that simple. Building more prisons obviously won't eliminate crime, but most of the law enforcement officials I've met with during the past few months are convinced that expanding our prisons and jails is utterly necessary to reduce crime. Each criminal sent to prison often represents not just one act of violence, but many. On the average, convicts committed to prison commit 14 serious crimes each year before being caught and convicted. Expanding our prison and jail systems to meet realistic needs will allow us to hold 19,000 additional convicts. During the next 10 years, that could mean an estimated 1 million fewer burglaries, robberies, rapes, murders, and other serious crimes in California. Unfortunately, building the needed prisons and jails will cost money, and this is a period of unprecedented cutbacks in government. In Sacramento, we're facing the tightest budget in the post-World War II period. For each year of my administration, I have opposed general tax increases. Yet now we face directly a pressing public need that requires substantial sums of money. As Police Chief Daryl Gates has correctly observed in Los Angeles with his 8500 plan, new funds are sometimes necessary and essential to combat crime. As for the state as a whole, I don't believe we can do the job of protecting you unless tax dollars are made available. It's not easy, nor my general inclination to raise taxes. Yet that is what I'm going to ask of you. To achieve the goal of controlling crime, I will support a sales tax increase and constitutional amendment to create a special fund dedicated to law enforcement activities. Under the proposed amendment, which will be authored by Assemblyman Terry Goggin, a fund will be established to pay for new prisons and jails, more local police and sheriff, additional prosecutions, and appropriate crime prevention programs. The amendment and the accompanying legislation will raise approximately $5 billion during the coming decade. Half of the money, about $2.5 billion, will be used to expand our prisons and jails. The other half will go to critical law enforcement activities at the local level. I propose a 0.25% increase in the sales tax for 10 years, and that the plan go into effect only upon the approval of the constitutional amendment by you, the voters. If the legislature enacts this program, I will call a special election this November so that you can decide as soon as possible if the new funds are to be made available to finance the designated law enforcement actions. A paper war on crime won't stop real criminals. Without additional funding, our current efforts will soon be nothing more than a paper battle. The 10-year 0.25% sales tax and the constitutional amendment, which creates the special fund, are the most important crime measures in Sacramento this year. Beyond the funding, there are additional laws that we need. At the top of the list, I will support legislation to prohibit handgun possession by anyone ever convicted of a violent misdemeanor or found guilty of violent offenses as a juvenile. It's hard to believe that the law today allows such individuals to purchase handguns. Accordingly, I propose a one-year mandatory prison sentence for anyone in possession of a handgun if that person has ever been guilty of a violent misdemeanor or juvenile offense. Assemblyman Mel Levine has a bill that will be amended to achieve this goal. At the present time, some juvenile offenders are committing serious violent acts, even murder, and being returned to the streets within a few years. Such youthful offenders must be incarcerated much longer, and where appropriate, sent to the adult prisons. Another matter of significant concern is the propensity of some persons on bail to commit serious crimes and threaten public safety. I will support efforts to amend our state constitution to allow new rules to be developed regarding the setting of bail in these extraordinary cases where public safety is directly threatened. It's not an easy matter to try complicated cases expeditiously and protect justice, yet inordinate delay can deny justice. Difficult pretrial motions can be consolidated and greater streamlining achieved. I will work with the legislature on this long-standing issue. As for plea bargaining, the system has worked in many cases. Yet dissatisfaction with the process has spawned a number of legislative bills. My preference will be to keep the system, but impose stricter control on its operation so that the public interest is fully protected. Full public disclosure would help significantly. The civil commitment program for mentally disordered sex offenders has not worked well. Repeated complaints have been made that dangerous offenders have been put on outpatient status and committed terrible crimes. The time has come to significantly modify or abolish the program. Finally, I will support efforts to substantially increase prison time for repeat serious offenders during their peak crime years. Studies have shown that a relatively small percentage of criminals can commit a huge number of crimes. Efforts to combat this problem are well worth the effort. I've spoken tonight about the need to spend more money to combat crime, including the urgent need to construct prisons and jails and finance additional law enforcement activities. In all this, something more must be said. Government can do much, but fundamentally our society is directed by the choices of individuals. Anonymity, urbanization, mobility, obvious differences between groups in society, all these play a part. Yet as we confront the sorrow, the fear, the suffering, and the outrage of the victims of crime, let us ask ourselves what each of us can do to strengthen the fabric of our community. Those in public service can discharge their duties fully and with deep responsibility. Parents can know more about their children and instruct them more carefully. Neighbors can be aware of each other and work together to assure a mutual reliance that will add immeasurably to their own security and well-being. In particular, I want to single out for special recognition those people in our state who work with young people, guiding them on the right path, and to those who work to combat child abuse and neglect in our schools and families. We sow the seeds of what we later reap through the whole of our society. In this respect, we should be encouraged by the work of Assemblyman Vasconcellos and the Commission on Crime Control and Violence Prevention. By working at the larger questions, we will develop ways to minimize the growing violence around us. The leaders of our state legislature, Speaker Willie Brown and President Pro Tem Dave Roberti, are providing strong leadership in Sacramento. Senator Omar Raines, Senators Davis and Boatwright are playing an important role in the state Senate to ensure a thoughtful anti-crime program. The Attorney General, George Dugmajian, has offered several proposals, many of which I've adopted. Throughout the state, I've encountered many people in law enforcement that have provided constructive suggestions. Sheriff Lowe in Sacramento and Sheriff Pitches in Los Angeles, District Attorney Vandekamp and City Attorney Bert Pines, and numerous judges have all been very helpful. But ultimately, your help will make the crucial difference. By approving new funds, you will strengthen the efforts of the professionals in the criminal justice field. And finally, by your own individual action, you can take personal responsibility for what is around you and in your neighborhood. In these ways, we can together make a California that allows its people to live with confidence, without fear, and abiding hope for the future. Thank you, and good night.
California Governor Jerry Brown outlining his anti-crime package.